It is September 10th, 2019.
Mike.
This is collective bargaining.
I feel great. Am I too tall?
at the Never University done. Of Central Florida, between the University of Central Florida Board of Trustees and the United Faculty of Florida chapter at the University of Central Florida.
You are sitting on the floor.
I know. I'm sitting quite low to the ground.
So you're asking what my child's going to do next? Apparently she's going to go work in a camp in Maine next summer.
Well, isn't that nice?
It is nice. She's got an interview, but...
She'll get it.
I hope so. Because it's what she wants. Because camping, boy, being in on that really... What pays, I'll tell you.
I have.
We're on the record now, Shirley.
Oh, I didn't realize. I'm
yes,
sorry.
You're,
that's all right.
You're being recorded.
Generations later will judge me.
I have the minutes from August 1st, 2019. I guess, do we approve minutes from the last?
That's the last.
Last
session.
Day, I guess.
Yeah.
Why not? Thank
you. Why not?
Well, see if there's any objections. Anyway. I don't know what to do.
What is today? The 10th.
Correct.
Time flies. And whether you're having fun or not.
That is the truth.
It's not flying last week.
I was going to say, are we having fun?
Is you need another one down there, Charlie? I think I only gave you four. Here. Another.
Okay. I don't know.
They have one.
Okay.
We're all good. Everybody seems to be in agreement that the minutes from August 1st, 2019 are accurate. Like you, Charlie.
Thank you.
Like you, Grannis.
Now you can erase that.
I kind of, now I'm into it. I like kind of like it. It's sort of like a.
All right.
Sort of like mm-hmm.
A sports car driving on the road.
Oddly comforting.
He's a Miata right now.
Well, maybe I. Oh, there it is. Welcome.
We're back.
Yes.
I know you probably missed it so much. 1 month of reprieve.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
It went by kind of fast, though.
It went by very, very fast. You know, small things happening, like new campuses opening and then hurricanes.
Hurricanes. We have a really nice person. Who is this young man? Who is this? Great business, where he drives up to our driveway on an appointed time of the week, and he has this beautiful truck. It's like a Mercedes-Benz, one of those Sprinters, you know? And he opens it up, and he has all these tools, and he details your car.
Oh, wow, nice.
It's really very cool. He doesn't come in or anything. He's got, like, battery-powered stuff, you know? A wall of scents that you can select from.
Get but that to the contract. Car washes for everyone.
He didn't show up this weekend.
Mm.
And so we asked him if everything was okay, and he said, not really. I'm actually from Aruba, and this is where I'm home with my family. And he sent us a photograph of their house.
Oh.
Like, no roof. You know, all the furniture destroyed, all the building materials all over the place, down on everything.
Yeah, that's bad.
Does he have a visa?
I think he has a MasterCard.
Yeah, It's nice to see all the relief efforts coming from Central Florida, since a lot of industry is connected, but it's devastating.
It is. It is.
So is he staying with you now?
No, no, he's back in, he's over in Aruba trying to help his family, so that's
Aruba
why he
or Abaco?
That
thing. Aruba or Abaco?
I mean, Abaco.
Okay.
I'm sorry, did I say Aruba? That messed the entire story up because everyone's saying, like, so well, what happened
there?
Aruba is a great place to be.
I think you're having a nice time.
Points to Sarah for.
He's Jeff on vacation.
Well, I just found out where Aruba was recently, which is why I knew that.
I actually have a residence in the Bahamas.
Oh. I did.
No, it did. It made it through.
Was it? It's
untouched.
On, wasn't, oh. It's on the end, right?
It's in Lutheran. And that's how funny it is. It's 100 miles from Grand Bahama, but just 100 difference 100 miles make everything. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we do have one of our reopeners to present today. Is there anything, any other business we need to do before that?
No.
Okay. I just saw the joint email go out this morning, so the thank you for everybody who worked on the editing and labored process of that announcement. And then our ratification, I think you received notice last night, we've had to move the vote date because of space and timing with the campus being closed for 4 days. So 25th?
Yes.
That's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, that may be a problem for me.
Okay. Is when is the meeting that this is around for you?
The 19th is the day the BOT votes.
19th.
And so, what is it? That's a Thursday, so I guess Wednesday.
We have to see if that falls in the reasonable notice period for our members.
What is that reasonable notice restriction?
Well, you have to provide reasonable notice of the vote so people know and can make arrangements to participate, and they have to be able to have access to the document to look it over.
So I was just wondering if it was 3 days, 5 days.
It's not defined.
There's no set date.
Okay.
Our primary challenge, of course, is nobody knows how to get space in some of the other campuses that currently exist for UCF. So we're running into some challenges there. But we will, let me work on that the next
maybe we could help
day or
too.
Two. Yeah. And see what we can do about that. But, that's good. I don't think I had that honestly, my calendar's a mess, but, get back to you tomorrow about
Please.
Whether we can change
that. And if you need help getting space, we'll see if we can help you with that.
Ross actually might be able to help with downtown if you want to talk about that. Do you have a place that's on main campus? It's not as much of an issue, or is it?
I don't think so.
No.
Library
main,
vote, right?
We've done the library in the past, and we were set up in classroom two.
Classroom two.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what other campuses did you want to do all of them? Or?
Roseanne
downtown.
Okay.
We don't have to do the medical campus yet because our unit isn't up there yet.
So I'm pretty sure I can help with Roseanne. And downtown, I think a call to Ross should be able to shake some sort of space loose for you.
Do you think he could get me a key to my office?
Do you not?
You do not have a key to your office?
I do not.
Big ask.
Can I call in a favor somewhere? I'll talk to Scott tonight, and then we'll see what we need, and we'll try to
work on
that.
Obviously, the more time before the 19th is possible is nice, because they like to know things.
Right.
But already. So, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I meet with the Comp and Labor Committee on the 17th.
Okay.
So, but it's before the 19th.
And you wanted... Do it something like between the hours of 10 and 2, something like that. At Roseanne,
yeah,
it can be a more collapsed time because there's not as many faculty, or?
Yeah, we were shooting for 10 and 2 to catch the early birds and then the people that get to campus for the afternoon classes. That was the time frame, I think, that worked the most for our
our bargaining unit.
Gotcha.
Okay, we'll get to work on that.
Thank you, guys. Mm-hmm. I know the hurricane messed up a lot. But
yeah.
There were a lot of emails that went out that Friday because everybody was trying to get everything out, and then I think those got lost in a hurricane bucket. It's just a little break from Dorian. So we are going to present our updated version of 17. I'm going to have Giovanna walk you through the changes and answer any questions.
Great.
Did you want to see a cup of tea, Ben?
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. I need to give myself a coffee, too. Thank you.
Did you get a coffee, Ben?
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
All right, so so this is taken from the T8 article. So some of the changes here, some are not going to come as a surprise. Actually, they're not going to come as a surprise. The first one is we were requesting family leave options and made some changes there. The changes are really changing the language from parental to family leave, with family leave now being inclusive of not just someone who's going to become a biological parent or adopt a child, but then also someone who may be the primary caretaker of a seriously ill immediate family member. And that's per Florida statute as described there. The other change was modified work duties, as opposed to calling it MID or modified instructional duties. So that's on starts on page 2 through 3. And the other change, like larger change, was actually in the page 5 through 6, 17.12, which is compulsory leave. And I think it was your side that requested maybe some help with some compulsory leave language. So all of that then is on 17.12A, placing employee on compulsory leave. We suggested some language there for that, and then like that is the main paragraph and stuff, and we deleted what was there before. And then on page 6, lines 264 to 267, we also added some additional language. So some things, for instance, like if the examination, we crossed out medical because sometimes it's not always medical, but it's some type of examination. But it's also becoming more inclusive because not everyone sees medical doctors. You know, some people's like their primary caretakers could be, I don't know, like a chiropractor or somebody who doesn't necessarily have like a medical degree. So it confirms that the employee is temporarily unable to perform assigned duties, and that's lines 264 to 267. Other changes also to compulsory leave come on lines 289 to 293 regarding the failure to complete conditions of compulsory leave. So all of that there is suggested language. The rest of it, it's just minor changes. Okay. And that was it.
Okay. Is it okay if I ask some questions?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So for I'm sorry? Oh. Well, my boss just said no.
Of course.
On page 5, so the compulsory leave section, I see that there's a strikeout afterwards, and I didn't know how much, without reading it carefully, how much of this is repurposed and what's the objective of the suggesting new language.
So did you want to hold on?
What do you mean how much is, at the bottom of page 5, how much is deleted?
There's 256, there's a bunch struck. A and mm-hmm. B were struck, and I was wondering, is it intended to replace A and B?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what's the thrust or the reason for the change, I guess, is that, I haven't read it obviously closely, so please let me know what
Sure. I would say in general the purpose is the same. It's replacing it with our preferred and suggested language for what this should look like. We did actually spend quite a bit of time discussing the issue of compulsory leave because we want to take this very, very seriously. And I know that you do too,
yes.
because this is yeah. a really significant thing that might happen to a faculty member. And so I think in our previous discussions, we all agreed that we do want to try to make sure we're preventing unintended consequences of this ever being leveraged in any way that ends up being discriminatory or problematic. And so we're trying to do the best that we can here with language to protect faculty and make sure that compulsory leave is only applied when it is appropriate and necessary. So it's just a replacement of language with based on the research and legal advice that we received about what is best practice okay. currently.
So I think when I'm reading, there's a sentence on 247, the employee must submit to a medical examination to be performed by a panel of 3 licensed healthcare providers. So did you know what the cost was for one medical provider, just out of curiosity? Do you have a sense of what the scope of that is?
The range is incredibly varied. Mm-hmm. Because it depends on what kind of specialty it has to be and what is covered by insurance and what's not. And so it really was so variable. We okay. didn't really have a budgetary number for that.
So there were 2 employees this year that were experiencing neurological difficulties,
mm-hmm.
and the minimum was $5,000. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of wanted to get a sense and a scope of what that would mean
sure.
when you're talking about 3 people that I'm assuming, and I didn't read this closely, that the university would be paying the cost of a panel of 3 people to examine someone. Now we're looking at $15,000 minimum for a comprehensive 4-hour or more examination of someone.
Well, can this is very serious.
Can I just pause in? Because I did talk to a psychiatrist and a psychologist as well. And so a psychological health con. So if it is something neurological or mental, usually you would see the neurologist to see if it's something physical, but then you would see like a counselor or like a mental therapy, which is usually ranging now between $75 and $120 an hour. And they would talk to the person to see if they can actually still function and stuff, and maybe at what level they are. And then the third person, depending, like just your like primary care doctor, someone just make sure there's nothing else, like, you know, in your system, and some blood test. And that can range anywhere from $150 to $250 an hour, or whatever the visit is. That's more of a visit.
So
the neurologist, yes, you're right. That would probably be about $5,000. But the other, like a out-of-pocket health counselor would cost about, it's not going to be in the thousands. It's going to be in the hundreds.
And how did you intend to select these?
Well, that's why.
They select 2.
Yeah, they select 2.
Employee selects 2.
Employee selects 2 from where?
From probably their primary care doctor, and perhaps also their, if they're seeing a counselor.
So are we looking at this in terms of for people that we think have neurological or aging, you know, dementia, that type of thing, but what about somebody that just has had, we had somebody that had a really serious heart condition a while ago that had open heart surgery, and I mean, are we talking about this for all medical conditions as well? Because
if the university is saying we believe this individual has a medical concern that, based on our non-expert opinion, is requiring them to be placed on compulsory leave, right? So if somebody has a health problem where they're taking leave and can hopefully access the sick leave pool and other things so that they don't end up being unable to continue their job, but if members of the university say, we've decided that this person is not functioning, we're pretty sure it's medical, then it needs to be examined pretty seriously.
Agree.
And so it's difficult to know the range of medical concerns that people could observe in that space, right? Because I don't feel qualified to observe medical concerns in my employees. But certainly there might be situations where you might have a conversation with somebody based on the behavior that people can observe, right? So I think probably most of the time, I mean, there could be a number of things, right? My father collapsed on the job because of, what's the thing where you get dizzy?
Vertigo.
Vertigo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had really severe vertigo, right, and had to be taken to the hospital. It ended up being really temporary, right, but it was very dramatic because he was in his classroom. High school students, very helpful. High school music students, right?
Class and over.
And that was very easily decipherable that it was temporary, right? So there's just a wide range of things. But if we're going down the path of you must leave your job, we're demanding that you can no longer work because you're unable to do it, that's what we're saying. So that could be a number of things, according to our research and what medical experts and legal experts explain to us.
So just, if I just go down the road just a little bit further, mm-hmm. just so I understand what you're open to, would you be open to sort of a separate discussion for maybe mental dementia, that part, and then someone who's had a physical blow that they may recover from? See, the thing is that the people with dementia and stuff, they're not taking sick leave. They're not performing. They're mm-hmm. not, but there are people who have a very serious debilitating disease, and it's possible they could recover, or it's possible that they can't. Mm-hmm. And FMLA covers a lot of things for people who break their leg and all those other things, and that's fine.
That covers unpaid, right? I mean, that's debilitating.
It is, but it's a different bag, and we have sick leave that covers, in most cases, mm-hmm. faculty have sick leave that can cover a great deal of that time.
Sure.
Because this is a set amount of time. I was wondering, since we're having that discussion, I was wondering if there was the possibility of maybe segregating those, or are you really looking for language that covers everyone at once?
I mean, we're looking at language that ensures the university cannot discriminate against people who are aging in this process unintentionally, right? This is not to protect against the one bad actor that is going around trying to observe old people messing up. Right, that's absurd, right? But that the unconscious and unintended bias can actually be pretty significant in these cases, and there have been a number of problems in other spaces. We're trying to prevent some of those concerns and problems, right? And saying, like, does the average person, unless you have a loved one or family member who has experienced dementia or early onset Alzheimer's, are we capable of saying, like, this is clearly that, right? No, we're not. And we want to make sure that people are not feeling overly empowered to do so.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Are you envisioning, like, in the neurology example, not necessarily three competing neurologists, but, like, a team of kind of more holistic views? So you have primary care, maybe a counselor, and a neurologist.
Yes, that's certainly possible.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking.
But it could be three competing.
It could. It's some level of confirmation, okay. Right? Because certainly any individual or the institution can find a medical provider who's willing to give an outcome that is the preferred outcome for what somebody wants to achieve. That is not very difficult to do, right? So we want some level of confirmation that it's not just this one person, and also medical providers are human practitioners of a mm-hmm. science, and there are often errors, and so we just need some confirmatory evidence to say this isn't just like one person who maybe doesn't have the appropriate specialty saying this, or it's one person who hasn't done enough diagnostic work. If the employee, you know, and this is really a situation I think that we're looking at where an employee disagrees with the university, and there are certainly instances, I think, where an employee may agree and say something is wrong and I do need to get it checked out, but I'm concerned about my job security or my ability to pay for said medical concerns.
It is a huge expense for someone. Yeah. I find, though, that people in that condition are unable to recognize the deterioration.
Often.
Just
often.
It's a consequence and a symptom of what's happening. If I can go to...
I have a question.
Go ahead. Please, by all means.
Thank you, Charlie. I kind of reading through this, the university decides that they should take action on with regard to an employee that's is having some sort of health difficulty, whether it's mental or physical, and then they provide a written statement of the suspicion based on specific facts and circumstances, because that so they give that to the employee. Then it says the employee may choose a licensed healthcare provider paid by the university. Well, what's that to give them care? Because then it says the employee must submit to a medical examination to be performed by a panel of three licensed healthcare providers. But there's that sentence floating in the middle. I don't really know what that healthcare provider is doing. So they choose a licensed healthcare provider paid by the university. Then the next sentence is submits to a medical examination by a panel of three.
We meant for the examination. They would pay for the, not for the care. I mean, for the, that was language that was there, I think, before as well.
They're choosing one, and then they're choosing two for a panel.
Yeah, I think that might be a duplication error, just saying that the employee wouldn't be responsible for the medical examination in the situation that the university has decided that they're incapable of doing their job.
Right, well, okay, so it says that they may choose a licensed health care. What you meant to say is not have that sentence in there, but have a sentence in there that says the panel is going to be paid for by the university?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I thought I had that same thought when I looked at it.
One of the other things I wasn't sure that you knew how a physician had been selected from the university side. Were you aware of how that went? Just to make sure that we're transparent enough so that you are seeing the same things we're seeing. Mm-hmm. Were you aware of how that person was chosen?
I haven't followed any specific case. So.
Okay, just because we are aware of that, you can buy any outcome that you want. Mm-hmm. What we did is we referred the person to the EAP physician that was chosen by that company, not us, and so we didn't participate in that. So I wanted to let you know that we had done our best to distance ourselves from that diagnosis and from influence on the practitioner. For instance, it's not a University of Central Florida doctor. That would be a huge conflict of interest for them, and we've actually had that problem in the past where an employee had selected a UCF physician to provide.
Yeah, I go to UCF.
I do too.
Well, it was convenient when I was on this campus.
And when you can get an appointment. So, but I just want to make sure that you understood where we had selected the physician to try to distance ourselves from that that appearance of bias, because I thought maybe you didn't know that. Now, if Mr. Matamor has a follow-up.
I do. Thank you, Charlie. You know, I even though I'm an employment lawyer and I should know better, but I thought under the Family Medical Leave Act, the way it worked is that the employee comes forward, and I know it would have to be modified because the employee takes the initial action under FMLA as opposed to the university.
Right.
The employee comes forward with their medical opinion from their whoever they went out and chose to give that opinion. And then the employer can have that checked out. They can say, well, we're going to hire somebody to see if...
He's actually an expert.
I'm sure he is. That's what I said. I should. And then if the two of those two healthcare providers disagree, there's a third, right?
I got it.
All right, so I passed that part of the section of the labor employment
you put board thing certification
of the board certification.
That's just at the beginning, though.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. But you know, that process seems to have made sense to the drafters of the law, because sometimes you don't need three. You know, sometimes the one carries the day, right? The first person comes in, everyone goes, like, it looks like an order, we get it, good, you know? And only if we have some legitimate doubts about it do we then trigger the second. And then if the second agrees with the first, there's no need for a third. It seems like that might be a kind of smart way of going forward.
So I'll say, just because the writers of a law thought something was a good idea isn't probably a heuristic that I'm willing to sign off on in general. But I do hear what you're saying about that process, and that you might be more comfortable with a process that says if there's not a dispute, there's a faster route and a cheaper route than doing three.
You could get three people together, pay them $50,000, and all of them agree. And then we just got...
Well,
you know,
what I like about this process, this is how it works, is we both explore problems and obstacles and get over them together. So if I can go to line 267 now.
Charlie, do you have a question?
I do, actually. Thank you. In that section, 265 to 268, it looks to me like the language that helps determine next steps has been altered in such a way that it doesn't show what happens if someone doesn't, it cannot perform the assigned duties forever. So that's what this section was doing before, is it says, well, if this results in a diagnosis of someone who is unable to perform duties, period, what happens? So this language, it addresses something else, but it takes away that end date, end statement. So I wanted to help understand why that changed.
No, it's the...
It's still there.
It's still there. It's down at 286.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's, see, again, that's I hadn't had a chance to read through it carefully. Yeah.
That's the inability. It's the interim step of basically, okay, if it is judged as temporary, or then there's a process for temporary, and then there's a process if you do not complete the process, or if you're in it, if you have the inability to return the work.
So you're open to some reorganization of the concepts in general. There's a temporary vein, and then there's a permanent.
Yeah, it's like there's temporary, there's the possibility to extend what was determined as temporary, and then there's...
I agree that those are avenues that I don't mind, but the organization is a little
Yeah, we can always talk about those kinds of things.
No, I think your point is well taken, because I think 265 through 267 and section D below contradict each other, because this says if the condition is judged to be permanent, so let's say... The university shall establish modified work duties or other reasonable duties. It doesn't suggest that as an alternative the person leaves the workforce.
I guess that's what I was... I didn't see where the person exited the workforce, I guess is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make sure that I had understood it.
Right. It's so, this sort of suggests that if it's permanent, that means they're on compulsory leave because they can't perform their duties, and now it's permanent. That means... in some instances, they would leave the workplace. They might even get disability. Disability benefits.
And every employee has the ability to resign before the release. I don't even think that needs to be in there. Anyone, anytime.
But that sentence could be read that when it becomes permanent, whether you can do it with the job or not, we have to give you some other job.
Yes. But I think I hear what you're saying, which is that you didn't intend, you do want an place to exit the system. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of organizing it differently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Allowing, to ensuring that the person has the possibility when it's temporary to return to the workforce, which was there before. That language was there before. So I recognize that. Hello. Mm-hmm.
So maybe up here, instead of, I'm not writing this for you, but instead of up here, instead of saying and establish, it would be explore or... discuss.
In which line are you looking
at? On 267. Instead of establish, it would be like consider, something like that.
Okay. Right now, I just want to make sure I understand the intent behind everything before we go talk about it.
Sure.
So that's, yeah. that's,
no, that's the
thrust
of
what I'm looking for,
right? Yeah, the intent is checks and balances, right? If this is, temporary, maybe extended, there is an avenue out, but it should be taken very, very seriously before the process has even begun. And then once it has begun, we got to make sure. And I think that's in the university's best interest, too, as you know, how litigious some of these issues can be if somebody has the means, and they do if they're with us.
Well, I think it was very brave to take a stab at compulsory leave because it is so important. Mm-hmm. So we will definitely look at that very carefully and seriously.
Sherry's in deep thought.
She is.
I am, but I have to think about it and be able to formulate my concerns after we have a chance to read the whole thing and then come back and...
So, there a reason for 317 through 319 for not giving the supervisor the ability to grant annual leave-ish?
This goes back to I think it's a pretty consistent argument that we've been making, that when you have a benefit, you should be able to use your benefit, and that the way that things are written in which we have to ask permission to use our benefit is not equitably applied across our bargaining unit. And so we are continually working toward making it so that there's not the opportunity for people to deny or approve things that we are entitled to through our collective bargaining agreement and through our labor rights because of a somewhat artificial position that can be very biased. And so certainly we're not in support of people abusing their leave and trying to be gone all the time or in really in ways where they're not fulfilling their obligations and responsibilities to their students and their work. However, people who accrue annual leave, which is not a majority of our bargaining unit, but a significant portion, need to have the ability to use it and not accrue it and feel like they can never take it.
Okay, skipping quite forward to page 9.
You want to have a comment about
her comment was okay.
Well, I understand the point, I'd actually like to hear examples of the inequally applied circumstances because none of us want that, right? So
I know, and I know that this comes up frequently where you said if you had just told us, right? But it's not in our purview to tell you when I have somebody come to me with a concern unless they've decided that they want to take it formally forward, right? So I can't give you specific examples from specific departments or individuals. I can just tell you that as the contract enforcement chair, as a visible member of the union leadership, and as a person who is known to care about equity and inclusion on campus, I've had many conversations with people where they're even just asking, how can I even do a better job of asking when I can take my vacation to be with my children? And it's like, I don't have time to teach people how to ask their bosses for what they need, but also I think that's a fundamentally problematic relationship that we've established for some of our 12-month faculty with their chairs and supervisors, that they feel like they need coaching on how to access their benefits.
Yeah, I understand that. I also understand that there are certain times of the year where all hands on deck is sort of a mandatory thing, and I'm not familiar with all aspects of things, but I know.
And some of that is artificial, though, and I think that's the problem, Charlie, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are some times when, yes, all hands on deck, I get it, I hear you. I also would like to see some evidence of what that means in different locations, because somebody says all hands on deck is necessary doesn't mean that all hands on deck is, right? And all hands on deck, and then you're there, and you're like, why could I not be on vacation with my kids while they're off this week or whatever? I'm sitting here waiting for an emergency. That's not an effective management of people and time. And there are some spaces that are more susceptible to abuse of that than others. I know that you know that. And so it's literally my job to try to prevent that.
Right. And again, I'm back to that same thing. Please tell us so that we can look at, you know, that kind of thing. There may be information you didn't have or whatnot.
Or the employee doesn't really understand that the reason why it was refused had some tie to the fact that other people might be out at the same time.
Which is a management problem, because if you're not explaining to your employees how those decisions are made, it's completely reasonable to assume that you're just not having access to your benefit in a reasonable way.
Well, that's true. And sometimes supervisors are not comfortable explaining because someone might come to them and say, I've got to, you know, I have to take off because my daughter just got arrested and I have to go bail her out in Phoenix, Arizona from a drug charge, and then you go
as a very specific. Yeah, oddly specific, but as a communication expert, let me tell you that there are ways to give a reasonable explanation there without divulging that information.
Well, I'm just saying, sometimes people are uncomfortable about that.
I understand that.
And sometimes people take leave for personal reasons or for health reasons or for family reasons, and so.
You're right, and that's what I'm trying to make sure that they can
are not
do that.
Really accepted mm-hmm. being sharing. I'll tell you a story. I was appointed to be the chairman of PERC in 1987.
What a joyful position.
And you know that had you accrued annual leave, and if you didn't use it all, you would lose it. Mm-hmm. Some of it if you were at the cap. So I went to work about December 15th, my first year, and they brought in the clerk's office brought in this motion for extension of time in a case. And I said, I don't sign these. That's signed by the hearing officer assigned to the case. They said that hearing officer's on vacation. I said, well, assign it to another hearing officer. all the hearing officers are on vacation. Sure. I said, okay, then bring it to the supervisor. All the supervisors are on vacation. I said, where are the other two commissioners? They're on vacation. I said, am I the only single person here in this building? And they said, yeah, except for the sports staff. Everyone's taking their vacation because if not, they lose it.
I hear you.
That happens sometimes.
Okay. The degree to which that happens sometimes, and there are occasional anecdotal evidence that people did a bad job of helping people schedule this, it is true, right? Of course that happens. I would be pleased to see evidence of that happening at UCF and to see that that's a major problem across any division, if you want to make that argument. I'm simply saying that the entire power should not lie with one individual about when you can take your bargained benefit that is, in fact, something you should be able to access, and that we should have a better way of doing that so that specific people are not disadvantaged and that there do have to be good reasons why you can't take it, right? And right now, there's not a big, we don't have a lot of room to say those are bad reasons why you didn't allow that person to take their annual leave, because they do take it for a number of really personal
reasons. Right. But I guess the way, though, you manage someone's use of leave is through the approval process. If you don't have an approval process, there's nothing to stop me as the chair to say everyone can be off for the last 2 weeks of the year. Because I don't have to prove it, so you can take whatever you want.
Right, and honestly, maybe everybody can be off the last 2 weeks of the year. I don't know. We have such a variable requirement for the groups of people in our 12-month positions. And I know that I think that you have heard me say enough that I am certainly a person who believes that faculty are not always reliable narrators of their own experience. So when we talk to people about these situations, I hope that you give me the benefit of the doubt that I am asking a lot of questions about how an employee is managing that conversation too. I'm just saying that, like, we need to have fewer of those conversations, and people just need to be able to use their benefit. So we can have a conversation about that.
I want to understand where you're coming from so that we can talk about what solutions that we might come up with. So that's very elegantly put.
Thank you, Troy.
Are we able to move to the next thingy?
Yes, Charlie, please.
Line 413, page 9.
I'm looking at the
There's a deletion there. I just want to understand what the thought process is behind it.
Okay, so my understanding of, or right now, according to that, is that we report leave as administrative leave when it wasn't really, it's not leave. So I think we're just trying to get some clarity on that section and,
topical.
It is very topical.
It is, extremely.
And also, I know that this is a frustration for you, that the record keeping of leave is so divergent across department and college in terms of, you know, and of course, ignorance of the law is not an excuse to break it, even if it's a policy, but why that would be a requirement, how that is defined as administrative leave when it's not something.
Well, I can explain again why I thought it was important to just put it in writing. ADM leave doesn't count against any leave that you have in any bucket. It is simply a way for the university to demonstrate how much money was lost during an event where there's a closure.
Yeah, and our argument is always that it's not an accurate depiction of how much money was lost because, for instance, when the university closes for a football game, I'm not working. Like, I'm not coming to main campus at 2:00 in the afternoon to tailgate with my students. I'm in my office enjoying the peace and quiet of no one else being around to complete work, right? And so it's a strange thing to insist that people who do work variable schedules based on accomplishing our research and non-scheduled activities in a variety of ways the university certainly doesn't want to say you shall not work when we have a football game. So I'm not going to, I don't want to record it if I was literally still in my office downtown or in my home office.
I think what we expressed before is that if you're working, then there's no reason to write ADM leave. And I think we had that with the Irma, the previous hurricane, where you people are like, oh yeah, I went to the McDonald's parking lot and I used their Wi-Fi and I kept working. Great. Mm-hmm. I'm sure your students really appreciated the fact that you were, you know, contactable and all that, especially if some of them were undergoing a great deal of stress. Tight.
And oh, no,
so, but when we do have people that are missing hours and the university does want to demonstrate, if they don't, they don't have to work after 2 p.m. when there's a football game, and if they want to show, darn it, that this football game's costing the university money, this is the way to show that you're missing class time, you're missing office hours, those things. It's also the way for the university to report that loss and to decide if maybe it's not a good idea to hold the football games during the week. I don't know, but they're not going to do that if they don't look
interesting
at the cost.
Interesting idea.
Yeah. But I think what you're saying is really important. It is keeping track of the time that would have been spent in class, would have been spent in scheduled meetings. It isn't a question of whether somebody's working, but the fact that I didn't go to class for an hour and a half on Thursday afternoon because the university was shut down. Even if I did something else, even if I was at McDonald's or wherever, there was still a scheduled activity that I didn't complete. And that's something I think is important for the university and the state to keep track of. It isn't saying our employees are doing nothing. It says they missed scheduled activities. They're not held accountable for it. It's not their fault. The administration is saying, we said to do this, but just marking that as there was a loss to someone, and it's not a question of accountability of the employees.
So I wanted you to understand our thought process behind it. As you said, I know that you're not crazy about record keeping, but I'm nuts about it. I love it. No, really, I just. But that's the thrust behind our thought process on that, so that there's a full understanding of the scope.
I'm a fan of some record keeping, Charlie. I am a fan of financial record keeping, of, you
that's
know, a lot of compliance. I'm actually kind of surprised that we would want to take such official note of canceling a Thursday only class, because we no longer meet the hour requirement for, you know, accreditation requirements when we cancel a Thursday only class, even one time in the semester. But I think for us, I hear you, I do. The culture of overproduction for academics is creating a lot of burnout, and the reporting of this kind of stuff, I think, can sometimes be a morale issue.
It's my phone. Let's plug it in. Sorry.
An angel is getting its wings. Sounds like. So that's, you know, I'm always going to push back on that on behalf of the faculty
and
the culture.
Oh, I understand. And I just wanted you to understand why it was important to us.
Yeah.
I have a suggestion, but we can talk about it.
Okay.
Anything else, Charlie?
Thank you. I think that everything else was either in the same vein or that I understood your position already from the issue. Thank you very much for taking the time to explain
of course.
Those positions. Do we have a copy? That way?
We have six.
Okay.
That's a lot to talk about.
Okay. It's what we do, Sherry.
Okay. To the caucus.
That sounds so fun. To the caucus.
Like Batman, right?
To the Batcave.
Sounds like better than to Secaucus.
To Secaucus. Where's Secaucus? Is that
Jersey.
A place I want to go? Nope. It's not a place I want to
go. I'm just going to leave it. I don't need it.
It sounds like one of those names that can either be weird town in New Jersey or a little island in the Keys.